are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, August 15th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, primary results from not quite across the entire country, but parts of it. And progressives and diversity and Trump wins. Also on the program today, report from Pennsylvania. Over 300 Catholic priests sexually assaulted children over the course of seven decades, and the church covered it up. Also, with hearings looming, Dems cave meet with Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh shows some skin, wants our government to fund religious schools. Meanwhile, a defense rests in the Manafort case, and Omarosa haunts the White House. The heartwarming story of a conservative who's lost his way, and algae could decide the fate of the Senate in the fall. I'm going to get to those Mulvaney attacks on protections from predatory lenders. And Trump claims not to be bound by the law involving Russia and Crimea. Lastly, Lula claims a right-wing coup in Brazil. All this and more, ladies and gentlemen, on today's program. All this and more. Plus, maybe we'll get to calls early today. We'll try all that. Sure. Sure, why not? Oh, we got to turn down that fan just a little bit. Put it down to mode 2 as opposed to 4 around here.
Commander.
That's the way we do it. We're going to put that. There we go. That's much better.
You got it, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Michael. Good job.
You're welcome. Always ready to echo what you said to somebody else. Quite capable of that.
Folks, just a reminder, this program relies on its members for its support every day. You can become a member for less than 50 cents a day. I don't know what you're paying for cable, but I would bet that it's at least 8.3 times that every day. 50 cents a day. You can support this program and make it happen every day. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, a reminder, our Android app has been updated. We have one more feature, I think, searching the archive that we're going to be adding for members. But we're going to be adding some of these new features to the iOS app. Check it out. It's free. It is free. You don't have to be a member to get the app. You can listen to the show. You can IM the show. And just go to majorityapp.com. So Omarosa is apparently really, really causing havoc for the White House. And again, I don't care about Omarosa, with all due respect. I want to say I'm sure she's a nice person, but I'm not. I'm not sure. So I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, I want to say how you win The Apprentice. You have to be really nice to everyone.
I'm an Omarosa defender.
I want to say.
I wouldn't go on that lane.
I want to say that everyone's a nice person. Meanwhile, Sarah Sanders has had to answer the question, is there a tape of Trump using the N-word? Now, we know there's not because Rob Burnett called the president and said, there's no tape of him saying the N-word. We know this from a presidential tweet. So I don't even know why people are asking this question anymore, but Sarah Sanders, based upon the fact that Rob Burnett assured us that there was no tape of President Trump saying the N-word, she's not quite convinced. Here's how she responds when Kristen Welker asks Sarah Sanders that question.
From the president's rollout last August. Kristen.
Sarah, have you asked the president if he's ever used the N-word?
The president addressed that question directly via Twitter. I'd refer you back to him. I can certainly say I've never heard him use that term or anything similar.
Have you asked him directly, Sarah?
The president, I didn't have to because he addressed it to the American people all at one time.
Why have you asked him directly?
Again, the president answered that question directly on Twitter earlier today.
Can you stand at the podium and guarantee the American people they'll never hear Donald Trump utter the N-word on a recording in any context?
I can't guarantee anything, but I can tell you that the president addressed this question directly. I can tell you that I've never heard it. I can also tell you that if myself or the people that are in this building serving this country every single day, doing our very best to help people all across this country and make it better, if at any point we felt that the president was who some of his critics claim him to be, we certainly wouldn't be here. This is a president who is fighting for all Americans, who is putting policies in place that help all Americans, particularly African Americans. Just look at the economy alone. This president, since he took office in the year and a half that he's been here, has created 700,000 new jobs for African Americans. That's 700,000 African Americans that are working now that weren't working when this president took place. When President Obama left after 8 years in office, he had only created 195,000 jobs for African Americans. President Trump, in his first year and a half, has already tripled what President Obama did in 8 years. Not only did he do that for African Americans, but for Hispanics. 1.7 million more Hispanics are working now. This is a president who cares about all Americans, who is committed to helping them, and is putting policies in place that actually do that. Kevin, sorry, Kristen.
So, in other words, yes, there is a tape. And also, we mistakenly lied about how many jobs Obama created for black people.
I can't guarantee anything.
I can't even vouch for the numbers I'm about to give you.
Give you fake numbers.
They did actually issue a correction on that, where Sarah Sanders said, we got the numbers right, we just got the time frames wrong. So in other words, they got the time frame right for Trump, but they meant more like the last 3 months, I think it was, for Obama, as opposed to his entire presidency.
Yeah, in a span of about under 2 years, he did more than Barack Obama did in a week.
It would be the equivalent of someone saying to me, you only weigh 50 pounds. And I would say, no, that's not. It's demonstrably untrue. I can get on the scale. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I was mistaken. I was right about the number. I just meant that you only weighed 50 pounds when you were four. That's what I meant. That's what I meant when I said that.
Yeah, just for clarification. And also, you'd have to say it with a lot of attitude.
Right.
Like, oh, no, I meant 50 pounds when you were four.
But everyone should rest assured, Rob Burnett has cleared up the entire thing about the tape, so the tape doesn't exist. Just the idea, like, this is like what we talk about now is just... I
want to hear that phone call. Rob, how are you?
Well, Mr. Donald, President,
I'm terrific.
Want to assure you, you did not use the N-word that we recorded.
We like that because that's a very bad word.
We love that.
We don't use those words.
We do love that.
I don't love that word.
Don't love that word, and I wouldn't love to hear that I used that word. Anyways.
However, now, look.
Black people ruined Apprentice, right?
This is just sort of, and this maybe gets to Matt Lewis's piece. We're going to read it a little bit later. But I will say that I never take this guy's word for anything either. But Penn Jillette says that there are Trump Apprentice tapes, and he says, I was in the room, and I heard stuff, and it made me uncomfortable.
Thanks for the timing, dude.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well done.
Well done.
And this comes from a guy whose TV show was named after a bad word. So he
That's
knows
right.
something about
that. That's right.
What's that?
Yeah.
Penn and Teller BS.
The BS.
Oh.
debunkers.
Oh, the oh, yuck.
Folks, when particularly when something like the Alex Jones, you know, gets bumped from platforms,
the
or
Alex Jones.
The Alex Jones, those type of things. I always head to the New Yorker to see what their take is. Steve Cole has a great comment piece in the Talk of the Town about Alex Jones, the First Amendment, the digital public square. Then, of course, when I'm there, I fall into a wormhole and I read about just enough. I don't like to read reviews before I see a movie, but they've got a review about Black Klansman. I'm going to pick that out. And then I was like, oh, how Charles de Gaulle rescued France. Okay, I'll read about that. And then I went over to the politics section and Bill Browder, who the whole Magnitsky Act came out of Bill Browder. His Magnitsky was his lawyer who was killed, et cetera, et cetera. That is why you subscribe to the New Yorker magazine. It's an iconic magazine that represents legitimately the best writing in America today. You can inform yourself about most current events and get insight from the New Yorker's writers. You find super entertaining content like Shouts and Murmurs, The Weekly Humor, Satire. I mentioned all the reviews you read, poetry and literature. I got a cop to the fact that I don't read much of the poetry. I just don't get it. I don't get poetry.
You never got poetry?
I never, ever got it. I liked it for a little bit, like when it felt like it was a puzzle. But then I realized, like, that's not why you read poetry.
I felt like it was.
Honestly, like, oh, what is
when
this?
I thought Lorca was a crossword, I liked it.
No,
but now it's boring.
With poetry, for me, it was always like, oh, what's this in reference to? Huh? Why? You know, like I'm always trying to put it into some type of equation,
like QAnon.
Right? Exactly. Exactly. I'm a real romantic, folks. You get cartoon caption contest. I've never engaged in that, but I've always thought that I could, and then I'm like, ah, forget it. But you can access the complete archive, which is super awesome. You get digital replicas of every issue of the print magazine from 1925. We're going back now almost 100 years with your subscription. Don't wait. Go to the New York, go to www, that is for the World Wide Web for your youngins, newyorker.com/majority. Receive 12 issues for $12 plus a free tote bag. And then if you enter my code majority, you will unlock an additional 50% off your subscription. That is 12 issues for $6. And you get to keep the tote bag. Subscribe to the New Yorker. Read something that means something. That is 12 issues for $6 and a free tote bag. A free tote bag. Go to newyorker.com/majority. Enter my code majority at checkout. Do it now. Now. Seriously.
And not for nothing, the New Yorker is now a union shop. So
boom.
There you go.
Boom. And they're supporting this program. I appreciate that. We have a lot of New Yorker writers on here. And because they write the best stuff. I don't want to say the best. I don't want to get anybody upset.
The best stuff.
All right. Let's go through the primary results last night. Good stuff if you are a progressive and if you are someone who wants to see more diversity in our government. At the very least, you know, there are folks in the running in, let's start in Vermont. Christine Hallquist could become the nation's first transgender governor. It's going to be tough. There's an incumbent, Phil Scott. And this is interesting. John from San Antonio used to call this program, well, still does. But John from San Antonio used to call this program and was always very upset that we were not being we would not articulate the taxes that were required for a single-payer system. You will recall that under the Affordable Care Act, states could have waivers where they could basically try different things. In Vermont, the plan was to try a single-payer system. And I think it was Shulman. Was that his name? The
Shulman,
governor?
Yeah.
I think
it was Peter Shulman.
Peter Shulman. Peter Shulman ran for... the plan was to roll it out. Now, I'm going to get the dates wrong because I can't remember exactly when it was. But I feel like the plan was to roll it out in 2013. And in 2012, I think he was reelected. His numbers were soft. And he basically got intimidated by the raise in taxes that would have to happen. Now, we know, and it's much tougher on a state than it is nationally to make these numbers work. That's just the reality of it. And we know, though, that the idea is your taxes are going to go up, but your net expenses are going to go down. So in the end, who cares whether you're paying it to the government or to private industry? The act of paying, except for the fact that when you pay it to the government, it's far more efficient. You get a product that's not burdened by having to provide profit for somebody. Nobody needs to go and buy a new Lamborghini or a new yacht with the money that you're paying for health insurance. And it's universal. So you can look around your society and feel like, oh, that's nice. I don't see people dying for lack of health care coverage. And however, that... that experience of the sticker shock involved in this. And John from San Antonio used to call us and like, people need, there needs to be groundwork that is laid for this. And it's not being laid. People need to understand the dynamic. And he was right. And Bernie, to a large extent, has done that or started that ball rolling. You know, I mean, you can see just even recently that report that was put out by the Libertarian think tank that was supposedly going to show why single-payer health care, a Medicare for All plan, would not work because, and I know single-payer health care, it's a catch-all phrase, but just bear, you know, give me a break. Why it would not work, because it would be so expensive over a 10-year period of time, and in their own document, they said, but actually, the cost to the nation is actually even $2 trillion greater than it would be to the federal government under a single-payer program. And the difference between the nation and government is that the nation includes all of our private expenditures. Not to mention, just if you're really interested in these type of things, the productivity that is expended every time you sit down to try and figure out your health insurance and get into an argument with your insurance company about stuff. So anyways, in the wake of that, Phil Scott was elected, and I think he's a fairly popular incumbent Republican governor up in Vermont. So it remains to be seen, but that's a very extended way of saying, like, you know, the opportunity, A, that we would have a major party nominate a transgender woman or person in this, you know, woman in this case, but just person, is an important step forward for not just the rights of transgender people, but the lives of transgender people, where there are models out there, and the more transgender folk become, just, you know, at one point we're going to drop that term. And then there'll be, you know, acceptance, and there wouldn't have to be the sort of, you know, a lot of transgender folks have to live in fear because of either discrimination or just sheer violence. So it's an important step. And it'll be great if she won. We'll see.
And it's not just improving their lives in terms of seeing themselves represented in office, right? Like, she's actually a progressive. And this is what Bernie Sanders was talking about when he said, you know, it's important, but it's not enough to have, you know, 50% women or whatever. You know, we need to have both, because most trans people are also working class people, because most people are working class people.
Right, exactly. And the same thing could be said for Ilhan Omar, who is a Somali American She won her primary, also a progressive. So we could have two. And I believe Tlaib is also progressive.
She's a member of DSA.
Yeah.
Rashida Tlaib is a member of DSA.
So we could have two, and it looks, you know, 90% chance we're going to have two Muslim women in the House of Representatives, and again, two very progressive ones. The WFP endorsed Jahana Hayes, defeated the establishment candidate in Connecticut. She was a 2016 National Teacher of the Year. In going back to Minnesota, we all heard the story. There was, you know, there was a couple pieces by Rachel Cohen, I think it was, in the Intercept on Attorney General Lori Swanson, who apparently not a good, not exactly a good government, you know, not exactly a good example of good government. Pretty right wing as well, but she was primed to win this. And The Intercept broke a couple of stories about how she was basically, I mean, tyrannical in a couple of different ways, but was forcing government workers to work on her campaign. Tim Walz won the general election. Walz, not necessarily as progressive as I think Aaron Murphy, as far as I recall, but and I am a little suspect about him, broadly speaking, but better him than Lori Swanson. Tim Pawlenty goes down. That is a prime example of the Republican Party being Donald Trump's party, even in Minnesota.
Right. I mean, that's why. I mean, I think he called Trump unhinged. And he had, obviously, a fun... In 2016, he called him up. And
apparently,
he had a fundraising advantage.
Never...
Name recognition advantage.
Never got the notice that there is no tape, according to Rob Burnett, of the president saying the N-word. Ellison...
No tape.
Ellison won big for attorney general. A couple of things about this. The attorney general position, particularly in 2018, is going to be a huge position, particularly in California and in New York. But states around the country are going to end up, they're going to band together, and they're going to sue the federal government. They're going to protect environmental protections. They're going to sue different agencies to make sure that they're doing their job, not just because of Trump, but also because of total Republican control. This is good because Keith Ellison is going to go in. If he gets into the office, he's going to be very aggressive. Not all peaches and cream. There has been an ongoing question and accusation by an ex-girlfriend that Ellison was abusive. There has been a promise of video proof. That video proof is not materialized.
Well, she said explicitly she's not going to release it.
Well, now.
Yeah.
Originally, she was.
Right.
And I don't know why you say I have video proof and then I'm not going to release it.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. You know, that's like, I don't know, it's like telling somebody like, oh, Michael, I have a secret about you, but I'm not going to tell.
Right.
This
but
doesn't,
seriously, please don't.
I'm going to. I was just saying I was not going
Sorry,
to.
Sorry, it was an inappropriate
for
time for a joke. Okay, go ahead.
I mean, this is disturbing, right? Because you don't know. To the extent that she's released some texts, it maybe suggests that he's not necessarily someone you want to recommend to a friend to date because he's not particularly nice. But that is different from abuse. And so, you know, I honestly don't know. I would probably need a little more evidence in Minnesota, frankly, if I was, you know, to do anything other than vote for him. But it is pretty problematic.
I feel exactly the same way. Do we? I mean, and also Tina Smith beat Richard Painter So I don't. Yeah, she crushed him.
Well, Tina Smith is
and she's the sitting. She took sitting Franken's senator, seat.
Right? She took Franken's seat. Franken endorsed her as well. I don't know if
she
saw that on Twitter.
Decent.
She's a solid progressive.
Yeah,
I mean, I think
so.
You know,
she seemed the obvious choice in that one.
Yes, and you know, I'm not convinced that things would have been different for Franken if there wasn't someone who could step into that seat. I don't know. Another thing interesting in Wisconsin, Richard Uihlein, big right winger, spent almost $11 million. To push a candidate. He was a Marine veteran and a businessman, a guy named Nicholson. I don't know what his first name is. Against another Republican, Leah Vukmir. They were trying to run against Tammy Baldwin. $11 million, and Nicholson lost to Vukmir, and it wasn't close at all. Vukmir was backed by the machine in the state and apparently right-wing talk radio. So Scott Walker will also face a challenge in the fall from Tony Evers, who is the state schools chief.
Do you think that's in play? What's your read on that?
I think it's as good a chance as they've had. I haven't heard necessarily great things about Tony Evers. But,
I've heard bad things. Harvey Kay on my show talked about wanting to tear up a check he wrote him, I believe, because of school issues.
It's a missed opportunity, but it is what it is. Randy Bryce in Wisconsin won the first district race. He was running against someone who was a pretty solid progressive, but Bryce got out of the door early, and he's a candidate who has a lot of charisma and sort of, you know.
Iron mustache.
Has an iron mustache.
I think some of the stories they pulled up about him, I think in some ways play to his benefit, frankly. I think, like, I have, first of all, some of the things he did going back to the 90s, the fact that he could tell a story about actually, like, improving his life, I think is relatable to people. And I don't necessarily read the stuff they dredged up on him as necessarily being a negative.
Yeah, I agree.
Some of his arrests were at protests to make the world a better place.
The recent ones. That's right. They would list. I liked his challenger. She might have even been the one I'd be inclined to vote for. But when she put out like X number of arrests and included in that like several things, like just a list, but right. It's like actually several of those are like disobedience, and then also some, I think one was like marijuana, which I think should be legal obviously, and then the others were, yeah, you shouldn't drink and drive. That was like in the 90s, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like when they try to smear Bernie Sanders for having had so much credit card debt or even
right.
committing like a petty crime or two. Like, how out of touch are you with regular people
precisely.
To think that's not going to make them connect with you more?
I mean, there was a time where that would. I mean, there was a time where it would.
Yeah.
But I think you have to be, like, you have to have a certain amount of tin ear, and you're going to operate on the wrong playbook. Another interesting race in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee County. This is the seat that was the former Sheriff Dave Clark, who, incidentally, was a Democrat. Sheriff Dave Clark ran as a Democrat. He didn't quite project that. But Ernell Lucas has won the nomination. And this is a very big race, at least for that area. And the reason is because Lucas has made a point of not cooperating. The sitting sheriff, who I believe is a Republican, I believe, or the person he's running against is very pro-ICE, like aggressively has been handing over people, you know, ask them if you're born in this country. If they're not, you know, cause regardless of their citizenship, hands the name into ICE, releases people, tells ICE. This guy, Lucas, apparently does not subscribe to that and is, I think, vocally pro-immigrant. So, you know, Ned Lamont won the nomination in Connecticut.
What do you think about that? You have any thoughts on that?
I hope he wins.
Well, of course, because he's a Democrat. But what do you think about him? You have a little bit of a history with him, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's a progressive. I he's a bit of a class traitor, which I appreciate. But sometimes it would be nice to. I think he's a good guy, and I think his policies are going to be good, and I think he's competent. I just am mad that he took that vacation and didn't beat Joe Lieberman.
Gotta tell people that story.
Well, it's just he went on vacation after winning the primary, and
he challenges Joe Lieberman. It's a huge upset. It's anti-war, right? Like it's this big ramifications for anti-war.
It was not just anti-war. The impetus was people. I mean, this is, you know, like I've referenced this, you know, particularly in the context of Netroots Nation. But the people who would go to Netroots Nation, the people who were on the outside fighting the establishment, had a big problem with Joe Lieberman because he was standing in the way of progressive policies, right? And ultimately he did stand in the way of a much better version of the ACA. And the argument was by the establishment, he's with us on everything except for the war. But the fact is he wasn't. And so the Netroots basically came in and, you know, which was a precursor to the stuff that we see today with Justice Democrats and Our Revolution and even like the energy of DSA, not necessarily the same exact politics, but the idea of like we're the outsiders and we're going to upset the apple cart. A lot of young people went into Connecticut and got Ned Lamont elected, or I should say the nomination for the Democratic Party. I also want to say that like he announced on air with me that he was going to run. His unofficial announcement on a Friday, he announced on a Monday. I was filling in for Randy Rhodes and I said, I got to get Lamont on. And he came on. And it turns out he knew a buddy of mine had mowed his lawns when he was a kid. So, and then he went on vacation for like a week or 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's...
In the middle of summer.
That's pretty maddening.
And it's like, you know, I get it. It's exhausting running for a campaign. But, dude, you need, you have a finite number of days, right? And you're doing something that so many people have invested so much into this. Like, you owe it to them to push it to the limit. And different people could have different. I could never make the case that that's why he didn't win. But I just feel like if you're given that opportunity by people, you owe it to them to work yourself until you drop. And
that was a major faux pas.
Just emotionally,
I get it.
It's just, you know, but.
But you actually think he is, in fact, a decent guy with some pretty good politics.
Absolutely.
And he might be a good governor for Connecticut, which I think Connecticut is the most unequal state in the country. That might have changed a couple years ago. Well,
that would make sense.
A lot
that would not surprise me.
Right.
That would make
right.
sense. I don't know what to say about this this report out of Pennsylvania in terms of the Catholic priests. I mean, this the state did this investigation. It identified 1,000 children who were victims over the course of 60, 70 years. There were probably thousands more. It was covered 6 of the state's dioceses: Allentown, Erie, Greensburg, Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, and Scranton. I would bet. And there's one example in this story that I have of one person who died of an overdose. But I would bet that if you were to trace a significant number of the overdose opioid deaths in these towns, the crossover, the Venn diagram of these two things would be pretty high. A grand jury reviewed more than 2 million documents, including from the secret archives. This is what church leaders referred to the reports of abuse they hid from the public for decades. This is according to the Attorney General. 1,400-page report include a 7-year-old boy who was sexually abused by a priest and then told him he should go to confession and confess his sins to that same priest. Another boy who was repeatedly raped for from the ages of 13 to 15 to the point that he caused severe spine injuries to the boy. And that kid became addicted to painkillers, later died of an overdose. They had one victim in Pittsburgh was forced to pose naked as Christ on the cross while priests photographed him with a Polaroid camera. This is just... Priests gave the boy and others gold cross necklaces to mark them as being groomed for abuse. This is the thing that's just... I mean, it's all enraging, but... there may not be any criminal cases from this because of the cover-up, almost every instance of abuse is too old to be prosecuted. Now, it seems to me to be conceivable that there could be changes in the law in Pennsylvania that might change those statute of limitations. I don't know. I don't know if that's constitutional, but this is just, you know, it's horrific, really horrific. And, I don't know what broad lessons you can take from this, but it's just horrific.
One thing I've tried to reconcile with, like, learning about these stories over time is, like, there is no justification for NDAs in a just society, especially in situations like this. I'm trying to justify. Like,
and I should be clearer on that. Like the, there were non-disclosure agreements for some of these student kids. So, in other words, if I'm just making up a scenario here, but a parent finds out and goes to the church and says, like, we're going to bring charges here. This is crazy. Well, we're going to settle with you. Here's $1 million. Here's $500,000. Here's $100,000. Whatever it is. You will get this compensation. Maybe you're able to move, leave town. The kid can start his life or her life at, in another context. You get therapy. I mean, on and on. But you got to sign a non-disclosure form. You see this, I mean, if people recall the story of the Winchester rifle that was told when I went to, I guess it was two of those tort conferences ago, how non-disclosure played a major role in that horrific tragedy, where you had guns that would shoot by themselves. Father ends up testifying against his son for the killing of his other son and sends his son to jail with his testimony saying guns don't fire by themselves. Well, he thought that because Winchester, when they settled with other people, had non-disclosure forms. And so the fact that they had this defect in their gun was never made public. This is the same type of situation, right? Like, there are people out there who were abused by a priest who was in one diocese and just moved to another diocese after having abused kids in the first diocese and because of a non-disclosure form. I mean, it's criminal.
And it goes back to what I'm always harping on with libertarians, right? Like, if you really care about freedom of speech, you won't want to live in a society where people with more money and power can say whatever they want and people with no money and power can be silenced.
Right. Except for the way they got around that was money, the expenditure of money became the same as speech. And And
silly me, how can I forget?
Go. There you go. There you go. All right, let's change gears a little bit. I'm going to take a phone call. I'm going to call into the phone system, and we'll take a phone call during the show. Why not? Folks can get a little sense of what
Thank
it's like.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report.
On the fun half, as you
Sam
can see,
will be
how,
with you shortly.
How fun this is.
This is it.
This is it. It gets so fun on the fun half.
What did Rush Limbaugh say? What was his thing? Having more fun
than
anybody should be allowed to have.
Something to that.
Only one man should be allowed to have.
Calling from a 210 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from? Okay, this person is
fun.
210. 210.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Sam. Okay, good afternoon, Sam.
Good afternoon, John. From San Antonio.
Okay.
I recognized your voice.
Yeah.
Okay. I recognized your jazz.
All right, so you listened to a little jazz and the as a soundtrack for the show. Good. What's on your mind, okay. John?
Yeah, last night was a fantastic night for our Revolution and Justice Democrats in the Democratic primaries in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Vermont. All four candidates I endorsed on Monday won blowout victories. In Minnesota 5th District, Democrat Margaret Anderson Kelleher raised more than $100,000 more than our Revolution, and Justice Democrats endorsed Ilhan Omar, yet Omar won by 18 points. She received over 65,000 votes. And there were over 135,000 total Democratic votes in the district, which is one of the highest vote totals of any district in the nation. I just wish the whole nation could follow the lead of Minnesota's 5th District voters who have the wisdom and commitment to make this country more compassionate and by electing great progressives like Keith Ellison and Ilhan Omar, who are promoting basic human rights like Medicare for all, $15 an hour minimum wage, and free college. In Wisconsin's 1st District, Kathy Myers was leading in the only poll release, but Bernie Sanders and Justice Democrats endorsed Randy Bryce, won by 19 points. Bryce is a union iron worker who's great on working class issues, and he'll be a great congressman if he wins against Republican primary winner Brian Stile. Democrats received over 1,000 votes more in the district, and Republicans already have a negative ad attacking Bryce for his arrest record. And everybody makes some mistakes in life. We incarcerate far more people than America, than any other nation, including China, which has over 800 billion people. So I hope the voters of Wisconsin's first are open-minded and realize that the people should vote for people who are going to help working-class people and middle-class people. Also, a great win for Justice Democrats endorsed Christine Hallquist in the governor's race for Vermont. The fact that the Republican Phil Scott is the heavy favorite, in my opinion, shows that people in New England, like in states like Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and even Maryland, where Ben Jealous is still down by 16 points in polling, are still open to Republican economic policy. What's your comments on this? And I want to go back to some overall vote totals and general elections later, if you want to go from there.
What's my comment on what, John, specifically? The wins?
Well, I mean, you can talk about the wins. I mean, you've already gone over those a lot.
It's encouraging, but I'll tell you something. I think, like if you look broadly, okay, women... People are going into the polling booths, and they're voting for women. And in rates that we haven't seen in the past. And if that woman is a progressive or a DSA member or whatnot, it's even better. But people are going in, and they are voting. They are voting. They're voting for people who haven't been, you know, in a position to win in the past, or maybe not, you know, folks who hadn't run. I mean, I think that is the sort of broad lesson as you look across the spectrum. I mean,
And Republicans are really settling into pure, unadulterated white identity politics, and Democrats are definitely starting to configure, at least on the identity stuff,
absolutely,
moving in a future-oriented
absolutely
direction. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, the sorting continues. Let's put it that way. And it's getting, you know, I don't want to say polarized, but yeah, polarized more in a good way. I'm happy about it. I don't want to say polarized only because some people make it seem like that's a bad thing. No, it's a good thing. If one end of the spectrum is moving towards white supremacy, then I think it's a good thing we're polarized. That's my
sense. Definitely. I mean, yeah, I mean, because women are already, you know, so much more democratic. And so just the fact that they're you know, leading a surge in voting is going to help all Democrats. And, you know, that in time will also help more progressives because, you know, even though even centrist Democrats are going to feel the pressure to move to the left, and that's already been happening quite a bit. And so, I mean, you know, you have the, like when Mike from PA was talking about, when I was talking about California a few months ago, he was saying that, you know, maybe I should be talking about, you know, PCCC and move on candidates. And those are great candidates also. And I support those candidates like Katie Porter in the 45th District of California or Katie Hill in the 25th District of California. I mean, they may not be, you know, hardcore, but I mean, they're still moving toward the left. A lot of them support Medicare for all.
Sure.
And they know where people are headed, you know, especially millennial voters, and you know, as they vote more often, you know, like the people in the 30s, there are more registered voters than just about right now than just about any other age group, and so I mean, it's just great to see. But what I was referring to was, you know, the fact that you grew up in Massachusetts and to see all of these governors who are expected to win races, you know, Republican governors, you don't think that that's because of more cultural issues? Do you think that that's just because
I think they're more moderate, and I think, you know, the governors, you know, I think at least in these states, you know, you're not looking at Charlie Baker is not making Massachusetts a right to work state.
Did you see what he just signed for voting rights?
What's he expanded it? Yeah, automatic.
He just significantly
voter,
expanded.
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't vote for Charlie Baker, and he is a corporatist. But legit, and also the reason the governor of Vermont's popularity has dipped, who in a very blue state right now, is because he signed some type of toughened gun legislation. So it really is a different type of ballgame up there with those governors.
Yes, it's highly localized. I think I really do think that's what it is. So.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to talk about the great turnout also. I mean, it's really good to see guys like, you know, Scott Walker. I mean, I can't wait till that guy goes down. I mean, I saw Ryan go down, you know, retire in April, and it's going to be one of the best moments of the night on the 6th to see Scott Walker lose his race, you know, after all the anti-working class issues that he deals with, and his, you know, how he worships the Koch brothers, to have him lose will just be fantastic. And also in Minnesota, they
yeah, you know, I had a thing where I had a breakdown of numbers, and I can't seem to find
it. I'm sorry, but that sounds like a very strong prediction. Walker's out, John?
Oh yeah, I just feel
you hear
gone.
The swag in that. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
All right.
Oh yeah.
Well,
he's out.
I mean, Walker might be out, but I will say this: that the number of Democrats who voted across the board in each of these states, even in Connecticut, was significantly larger than Republicans. I had a breakdown against these numbers, and I can't find it right now. But really impressive.
I got to admit, I'm taking a lot out of the strength of the confidence of that Walker prediction. If I was to personalize these results, he would probably be the one that I would. I mean, I want all Republicans to be destroyed, obviously, but it would be beautiful to see Scott Walker finally lose.
John, I hope you're right. Appreciate the
quick
call,
question,
buddy.
John, do you have a Twitter handle? Are you on twitter.com?
Yeah, I'm I mean, I don't do too much on it, mostly. But, I mean, I've been retweeting a lot of stuff by this guy, Warren Gunnels, Bernie's main policy guy. Yeah, let me see. Let me see if I can remember it.
Raucous dendrite. Sorry, what?
Yeah. Raucous dendrite at Cacophonous Minuti.
Okay.
What?
All right. John, I'll tell you what. Send me an email.
I think
all right?
We're going to need an email on that handle.
Appreciate the call. Appreciate the call. Okay.
John is a wizard.
Right. We're going to, you know, we are woefully behind in our setting up our website stuff, but we're getting on it. And we're going to have like a little section for like a friends of the show type of thing like that. So
every little detail I learn about John outside of the like wonky stuff is just mind-blowing.
He's like an onion. You peel it and it's just unbelievable. All right, let's play this one clip because this I find, this is a clip number three. And there is a zombie lie that should have been completely destroyed by what happened in Kansas, frankly. I mean, there's a lot of other places where it could be destroyed, but it is this zombie lie will not die. And that is that the Laffer curve is real and that if you cut taxes, you will increase revenues. Now, it's quite possible that revenues can rise even though you've cut taxes, but that is different. That is a coincidence as opposed to a causal connection. Here is
Peek is her name.
Yeah, Liz Peek, longtime right-wing talker, former Wall Street executive on Fox News, pushing this lie.
The big lesson from what has gone on this year is that individual tax revenues are up. That's a big surprise because Democrats have said, oh, you're going to cut taxes. It's going to blow the deficit through the roof. What happens every single time? It happened when Reagan cut taxes, when JFK cut taxes. Basically, tax revenues go up. It's sort of counterintuitive, but basically the income level grows. And we've seen that this year. Mm-hmm. Income is now up 6% or so. And as a result, income tax revenues also grow.
Okay. First off, in terms of Reagan, Ronald Reagan raised other taxes that increased revenue. Social Security taxes went up during Ronald Reagan, increased revenue. Secondly, the economy has been expanding for years. In the wake of the Great Recession, it's been doing it slower than we want, starting to pick up more steam. It was doing this in the last year of Obama's year. You can see the graphs. There is no sharp increase up. It is basically following the exact same trajectory. So the economy is expanding. Tax revenues were getting larger anyways. If you want to do an experiment to see what happens when you slash taxes, corporate taxes, when you do basically what the Trump administration did, you can go to Kansas and see where they don't have the ability to borrow money. And yes, our deficit has exploded. Do I think that's a problem? Not necessarily, no. I think we wasted the money, though, on giving millionaires and billionaires tax breaks, and they're not going to, it's simply not as efficient as actually giving that money to the rest of us. But if you want to see what happens when the government doesn't have the ability to deficit spend, which is basically what they did for these tax cuts, then go into a time machine, travel 4 years ago, and look at what happened to Kansas. Sam Brownback came in, did almost the exact same tax plan that Donald Trump did on a national level, and it almost destroyed Kansas, destroyed their education system. It was so bad that the Republican legislature re-raised the taxes. So if that counterintuitive myth that she was talking about was true, we would be looking at Kansas and going, wow, what a success story, instead of like, wow, what a disaster. Sam Brownback would be running for governor again, or would be running for national for presidency because of his success, the Kansas miracle. Instead, he is literally the ambassador to the ether.
He was appointed, occasionally emerges to try to get fascists out of jail.
Right. He was in. He was named ambassador to religion. They keep him in a hovercraft, and he just hovers over the earth and just goes to religion, wherever it finds itself.
Yeah, you're an ambassador to the religion. Mark Burnett.
They put this guy, it's the equivalent of sending him to Siberia, because he is a walking reminder that this theory that if you cut taxes, revenue will increase is bunk. It's bunk. We are deficit spending. Every time you increase the debt, the public debt, you increase private equity. And so two things can happen that not be related. I brush my teeth today and it rained somewhere. That's a coincidence. That is not... My brushing my teeth does not cause it to rain. But that is the...
It rains so infrequently.
Right. That... that is...
That was a very Cedar-style joke, actually.
That was good. That was good. It was a Cedar-style joke. So hopefully that myth will die. But they really... The failure of the Democrats to make more of what took place in Kansas, I think is going to come back to haunt them. There should have been more, far more talk about that.
Or in the whole country over the course of the 80s, right?
I mean, in the 80s, the fact is that Ronald Reagan increased taxes in other areas, so revenues didn't drop, and we have the ability to deficit spend. So, you know, you don't necessarily have to do the draconian cuts that they did in Kansas because we can borrow the money. All right, we're going to take a break, head into the fun half. Folks, a reminder, the show relies on folks like you for its support. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com, jointhemajorityreport.com. There you'll have the opportunity to support this show. You can either do a one-off donation there, or you can take the option of less than 50 cents a day, bringing this program to your listening device or viewing device every day. JoinTheMajorityReport.com. Also, don't forget JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Also, we've had people who are looking for the BetterHelp code. We're going to start putting that BetterHelp.com/majority in the podcast description with the link, so that you can get there. BetterHelp.com/majority. Last night was Tuesday night. Tuesday night, sans super producer Matt Leck. How did it go?
Substitute super producer Brendan Finn crushed it. He did a great job. Thanks, man.
Sub soup.
Yeah. Sub soup.
Yeah.
I think you did a very good job. There was a need after the show, without putting too much out there, to on David Grisham's end to get some help from Leck on something, and Leck is clearly enjoying his vacation, which we're all happy to hear. Trevor Ball, you and I had a really the Ben Shapiro Holla is a Girl character was in full effect, and that was very fun.
That's good.
And the commentary, the cold open of Paul Robeson talking about colonialism and explaining the idea of why the idea of the West is a fiction. It's an interesting show for patrons this weekend. Saudi strategy in the age of Trump. And, of course, woke bros. But thanks, Brendan. Patreon.com/TMBS, guys.
What's up with the Antifada, Jamie?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. We have a new episode dropping probably by the end of the show today. So once you're finished listening to MR, you can go right on to the Antifada. We have a very special guest named Comrade Communicator of the Intergalactic Workers League. And he kind of goes back and forth between him and our producer, Andy. And they kind of outline both an orthodox history of Posadism and the role of this guy, Jay Posadas, in actual mainstream Trotskyist movements. He was actually the head of all Trotskyists in Latin America for a while, which is a pretty impressive post. And then Comrade Communicator goes over the more, let's say, wacky things about Posadism, which really seem to be resonating with people today, and actually makes a pretty convincing case for why it's a thing in our culture right now.
All righty.
And Posadism being, I'm sorry, I must define it. The idea that space comrades are going to come down and give us full communism. There's more to it than that. There's dolphins, there's water birth, but.
Right, of course.
Just check it out.
Of course there is. Of course there's dolphins and water birth. Well, it's not a literary hangover. You can check out if you're missing your
giving you a little Matt impression.
Your Matt fix.
Oh my God, North Dakota, dude. Weed. Weed and Hawthorne.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Head into the fun half. We'll be right back after this. 646-257-3920 is the number.
Hey.